You listen to the Black Block on 3CR Community Radio, and we've got a special guest on the line, none other than former Senator Brian Gregg, who put the anti-genocide bill up in 1999. Good morning, Brian. How you going, mate? Thanks for coming on.
Good morning, and hello to everyone in Victoria.
And in the studio, we have Viv Malo.
Yeah, thank you, Brian. We really appreciate your time here. What we wanted, why we invited you on was just could you please tell a story about introducing the anti-genocide bill in 99? What was your motivation? How did you become aware that it wasn't yet part of domestic law? And, yeah, just tell us the story, please.
Well, it's interesting, I suppose. There were two factors. I was a senator with the Australian Democrats, and I suppose a lot of your listeners would remember the Australian Democrats. It was what, it was a minor party, but back in the...
Yeah, we remember, brother.
Well, of course, as I get older, because I'm now 53, when I was in the Senate, I went in at 33, so I was a very young senator. And the Australian Democrats in those days were very well known, and at the time we had 9 senators, so quite a significant force on the cross benches. Yep. But a lot of young people these days don't know that the Australian Democrats, because they don't exist now, and they're fading away in the memory of younger people. And a lot of new minor and micro parties have sort of replaced that space. But when you're a minor party, you're always looking for issues that aren't being addressed by the major parties. That's your strength, and in a sense, that's kind of your duty. And so as the Australian Democrat spokesperson for Attorney General's and Justice and Customs issues, I was looking around for something to get my teeth into that went beyond the day-to-day work of the Senate and the day-to-day work of the legislation coming at me from the Howard government. And this one kind of caught my eye, mostly because one of the things that happens when you're an MP or a senator is that you get asked, you don't have to do it, but you get asked by the parliamentary system if each year, particularly in the new year, if you'll take on an intern. There are lots of keen young people, particularly those studying law or studying political sciences, who are really, really keen to get a few weeks' work, volunteer work, working for an MP. And they come and sit in your office and help out. And there's often not a great deal they can do. A lot of MPs won't take them on because they sort of get under your feet more than anything else. But if you're prepared to give them a go and give them something to do, then they can be really valuable. And most often what they like to do, if they have a particular area of interest, is get to work on putting a bill together, a private member's bill, particularly if they have a passion around something. And I took on, over the 6 years I was in federal parliament, I took on, I think, 4 or 5 interns. And one year I had a wonderful young woman who was studying law come to work for me called Claire Vinnicum. And Claire had a particular interest in this. And she put it to me, and I was a bit bewildered because at the time I didn't know that Australia was so far behind in this area. I didn't know that Australia was not a signatory to the convention and there were no particular laws against genocide in this country. And she said, well, there isn't. And she sort of talked me through it. And she said, wouldn't it be great if we could get some debate going around this? And I said, sure, okay, go for it. So the kudos for this really rests with Claire. So she put it together, and she put the bill together, and kind of by accident and coincidence, around about the same time, we started to get some quite solid news stories around Australia, and some in Melbourne for that matter, of Nazi war criminals coming to the fore. Conrad Kalej was one that came to mind, who was discovered living in Australia, and it was alleged that he was a former Nazi war criminal and hadn't come to justice anywhere in the world and was living comfortably in Australia. He was then in his late 80s, early 90s. There were some others. It was also known that there were some former war criminals from Cambodia also living comfortably in Australia. And one of the things we did once we produced the bill and tabled it in Parliament is we held an inquiry through the Senate's Legal and Constitutional References Committee, and we took some public hearings and had an inquiry into the strength and weaknesses of the bill as people and legal organisations saw it, and that generated quite a bit of debate and wider discussion around it. So that's really where that came from.
So, yeah, that's right. I was part of a group of people who actually tried to charge the Commonwealth with the crime of genocide back in 97. It was Howard. Mm-hmm. Howard was in government with Nulurima, Buzzacott, Thorpe. And we were told that genocide's not a crime in Australia. There just wasn't any legislation. You know, which I thought was pretty weird because, my understanding of the UN Convention was that it had universal jurisdiction, no one was immune and had no statutory limitations. And we got to the point where there was an admission by the federal court that genocide had actually happened, but we was told we had to prove the intent, which I thought was strange again. And your bill was put up at that time, 1999, and just wondering what happened to the process since then. I thought, well, they've got this domestic version of this international law. I suppose that's something, but I just looked recently and said that the bill was not proceeding in 2018. So I'm just wanted to get your thoughts about that, and mainly that point.
Well, There are literally hundreds of private members' bills which are introduced over any term of government. Most terms of government are about 3 years. But, of course, no bill can proceed unless it has the numbers. You know, politics is all about numbers.
Okay.
And governments, as we've seen from Scott Morrison in recent days, governments are all paranoid and controlled by numbers. And no piece of legislation can proceed unless it has the numbers. So you can't even bring on a bill for debate, let alone pass it, unless you have the numbers. And for whatever reason, the Parliament of Australia has never had the gumption or the courage or the will to bring forward that bill or any similar piece of legislation. And I think you're right. I think you've touched on it. I think the great sensitivity or the great concern,
lack
the great
of will.
Sort of lack of will, and the great cultural fear is how this issue touches on our past, touches on our own past, and triggers those debates around the country, around how our history intersects with Indigenous history and the intersection of genocide through our own history.
I'm just thinking on that point. If they consider how that affects their past, well, how's not having a genocide convention going to affect their future? I think that's an important issue there. And if they don't want this sort of protection for their people in the country, not just Aboriginal people, but their own people as well, that makes them subject down the track to the same happening to them. So that's the whole idea of prevention and punishment for the crime in the first place, is to make sure it never happens again. And so fundamental a law that's not part of the Australian legal landscape still today. It's pretty extraordinary situation. And I just wanted to ask you, what was the reaction of the Parliament at the time when you put that bill up?
Well, Parliament didn't really care because it knew that the bill was not going to go anywhere. Mm. 99% of private members' bills never go anywhere. That's just the nature of them. As I say, governments control bills with the numbers that they have. The governments decide which bills pass and which they don't. Of course, we've seen in very recent days how that can fail and how Scott Morrison shut down the Parliament just late last week.
Yes.
When he realised he didn't have the numbers on this... I'm just trying to think of what the legislation
was. It was the...
Was it the encryption legislation?
Yes. Well, they got that through, actually. Encryption. What was the other one?
That's right.
Yes. They were fearing that the other piece of legislation would show them up.
But you can see what I'm getting at, though. With the government being so uncertain about the fragility of its numbers in the lower house, particularly with the large, unstable crossbench, governments will do anything they can to prevent losing face.
I'm just thinking how that would have applied to Nazi Germany back in 1945 if Hitler said, we haven't got the numbers to pass this law and so we're not going to have that genocide punishment and prevention regime. I wonder if he had said that. But it was an intervention by the world on Nazi Germany. And I can't understand why there isn't an intervention in Australia in the same context.
Yeah, well, don't forget that Hitler didn't stop at burning down the parliament. Remember, he burnt down the Reichstag.
Okay. I wasn't totally aware of that, but he attempted to avoid that issue. I'm pretty sure.
He burnt it down and then blamed it on his enemies. So that's where that leads to.
Yeah.
But of course, look, Australia is not unusual in being deficient in core legislation. Remember, we are the only Western democracy and modern country that doesn't have a bill or a charter of rights of any description.
Or a treaty.
Or a treaty with its indigenous peoples, for that matter. And it's quite startling to me that, you know, even the Australian Labor Party, which is a modern democratic socialist party, is still so incredibly weak in these areas, as opposed to Labor parties in, say, Canada or Britain, or for that matter, New Zealand, our near neighbours in New Zealand, which are so much more advanced.
Yes,
in these areas.
Absolutely. Where do we go from here now, you think, Brian? It seems like they're not going to ever legislate against the crime of genocide. I think it would sink them.
How can others have human rights if this most basic international law is not upheld? Yeah.
Look, I think it's fair to say that within 6 months' time, Australia will be governed by Bill Shorten and a Labor government, and I think it's probably fair to say that they'll be there for at least two terms. On current polling, the Australian Labor Party is 10 points ahead on a two-party preferred basis. That means Scott Morrison and the coalition is looking at losing at least 20 seats. So, that the Labor Party is heading into a comfortable victory with a solid majority of 20 seats, and that'll give them 8 years of government stretching out in front of them. So I think that means there are opportunities there for people and progressive organisations through the union movements and others to say, okay, let's do something. You've got a thumping majority, a strong mandate, a lot of progressive MPs. Let's actually do something. There's no point in having power if you're not going to use it. And I think Australians have shown, putting my other hat on, because I was very strongly involved in, LGBTI issues over the last 30 years.
Yep.
Australians have shown through the marriage equality debate and the postal survey that they are much more progressive and much more forward-thinking than our parliament and our political representatives. And I think they are much more sympathetic on these issues than our parliament expresses. And I think the Labor Party needs to catch up with that.
Yeah.
So is there any chance of someone else putting that bill up again and having writing it like that situation was how they won that?
Well, that specific bill, each time an election is called, Parliament is prorogued. That's the technical term for it, prorogued, which basically means falls off a cliff, it ends. So every bill which is on the notice paper, including private members' bills, they all die, they all stop. So somebody could pick that up and dust it off and reintroduce it under their name and it becomes a fresh bill. Sure, you could do that. But what would be much more likely is somebody could pick it up and maybe tweak it a bit, maybe make a few changes, have a fresh look at it. It's now 20 years old, yes, or thereabouts. Have a fresh look. There might be some recent advances. There may be some new legal changes in comparable jurisdictions people might want to have a look at. There may be some things that we didn't think of including. Someone can pick up where I left off. It could be done by a minor party. It could be done by an individual. Ideally, it should be done from someone from... I was going to say from the government, but that's not actually true. Ideally, it should be done as a cross-party bill. Ideally, you want a bill that has broad support across the chamber.
I think you're right.
Well, that's really good advice.
I wonder.
Something to think about.
I wonder, in fact, if we might not see some more bills over the next 10 years that have cross-party support.
Yeah, absolutely. I think why not? It's lots to think about. What you've just put out has really been awesome, and I want to thank you, Brian, and Claire Ridikin, who gave you the information that inspired you. And thank you for still talking about it. It's something we talk about a lot on here.
Yes, really appreciate you coming on the air today, Brian, and I appreciate the work that you did do whilst you were a senator there, and hopefully next time. And I think I've got this belief that there's genocides connected to ecocide and, you know, the whole climate destruction, you know, what's happened to the custodians, the caretakers and the guardians of this land is what's causing the problems today. And if that law had been in place in 1949 when it was ratified by the Menzies government, it would have saved the stolen generations, the deaths in custody, the conditions of life, nearly all the problems that Aboriginal people face, the huge gap that we have here in this country today. So I just want to say thank you to you for explaining that to us, you know, what happened to your anti-genocide bill, and just to say thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. Have a great day.
Enjoy the summer. Thanks, mate. Thanks.